Welcome, everybody, to the Mongols Podcast Preview Show, brought to you by Roughneck Scarves. I'm Justin. Here with me is James Grossi of TFC2. But before we get into things, busy day here in the land of the Riverhounds and TFC2. So, a couple things to tell you about. First of all, the game on Saturday has been moved to Highmark Stadium at 3 p.m. Tickets are $5, general admission. Gates open at 2. If you want to experience the club level, access is only $10 more, cash only, and that includes a cash bar. Season ticket holders can attend the game for free. And secondly, and the big news for the Hounds fans, our buddy John Krasinski reported, and the Hounds have confirmed, that both Joe Greenspan and Romeo Parks have been ruled out due to injury on Saturday. So depth will be tested at both ends of the pitch this weekend. That being said, let's jump right into the game. We're here with James Grossi. He covers TFC and TFC2 for MLSsoccer.com, Walking the Red, Canadian Soccer News, and The Blizzard. Welcome to the show, James.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, excited that you're here. So I guess we'll just jump kind of into it from TFC2's perspective, and then you're welcome to kind of ask some questions about the Hounds, then we'll get into predictions and scores and all of that kind of stuff. So first of all, I guess just with the big change of venue, for the Hounds fans that don't know, I guess you guys had a midweek game there that tore up the field pretty good, plus some weather. Is that correct? And is that why we're a change of venues?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by it, but perhaps not as surprised as I would have been. You know, it's been a difficult sort of stretch for this pitch between starting in the middle of February and then playing 6 home games or something like that over this spell. You know, I'm sure it's the same in Pittsburgh as it is in Toronto. This is not a very good time of year for grass growing. And so we had that game on Tuesday, and the pitch looked all right. It looked a little soft, a little loose. And then we had some nasty rain come through all throughout that match. And so I guess they tore it up pretty well, and it was better to move it down to Pittsburgh than risk playing on a surface that wasn't up to par.
Yeah, I guess we always want to play on the most playable field and not play on junk. So that's probably a good thing. So just kind of jumping into your season a little bit with TFC2, 2 losses to start the season plus a canceled game, but your 2 losses, 2-1 to Red Bulls 2, and then a 2-0 loss to Charlotte. So how do you feel like the team shapes up for the rest of the season? Which team that you faced so far was better, and kind of tell us about the 2 games so far?
Yeah, you know, it was a pretty tough start aside from the first 2 matches being on the road and being against some pretty quality opposition as far as the Eastern Conference goes. TFC2 is a side that's sort of going to be a work in progress, and it's probably going to be like that for most of the season. You know, about a week before the season opener, their roster had about 16 guys on it, and then they added a couple more, and they've added a couple more since then. And from week to week, you're never quite sure who's going to be available. And so, you know, the coach Laurent Gayot sort of has, I wouldn't say one hand tied behind his back, but he's got some other considerations that have got to come into his factoring when it comes to putting a lineup out there. You know, the first game in New York was it was a strange one. You know, Toronto scored first and they looked bright, and New York did their high press, high energy sort of madness, and you know, they ended up scoring 2 goals on sort of. The first one was a bit of a nasty deflection from range, and the second one was just a lost mark. And so you turn an early goal and advantage into a 2-1 loss. And, you know, looking at the stats afterwards, Toronto conceded 31 shots in that game, which is just absolutely ridiculous. You never want to come out of a match having given the other team that much of a chance to look at goal. And so we went into the Charlotte game, and, you know, the team – 2-0 loss on another rainy night down in Charlotte, another tough opponent, another match on the road. You know, it wasn't the greatest performance. They really sort of struggled to craft many opportunities, but they were much more solid on the back end, and they very much limited Charlotte to a few chances. And we sort of saw just how clinical of a team Charlotte can be, where the 2 times Toronto had breakdowns, the first one, you know, a defender gets a little bit isolated and there's very little cover for him, and he's a little hesitant, and Herrera sneaks one in, and, you know, maybe the keeper could have done better on it, but that's the way it goes sometimes. And then second one was, you know, another missed mark and another easy header, and that's all she wrote for the side. So it hasn't been the start they wanted, but, you know, speaking to the head coach, he sort of said that he always anticipated this was going to be a tough spell between not really getting the team together and being on the road and playing tough opponents. And then on top of everything else, TFC 2 had a bunch of players that were still eligible to play for TFC 3 down at the Dallas Cup last weekend. And so they were a little short-staffed. And, you know, that's just another one of those factors that always sort of has to go into his game plan.
Yeah. Just like thinking about Eastern Conference, when you think about the two teams you played so far, which team would you say was better and is looking better to start the season?
They were both different. I think Charlotte would perhaps be considered better just in the sense that you know what you're going to get from them week in and week out. And, you know, so they looked very much like themselves. You still had Herrera causing a fuss. You know, they lost Enzo Martinez. He moved up to Colorado. But they look like they're going to be strong all year. New York, you know, doing my scouting ahead of time, I was looking at their roster and they had 6 players signed to USL contracts. So that was a little bit bizarre. And that's just a function of they have so many guys on their first team that are still going to be factors there. So, you know, you had 3 or 4 players that had featured in the Champions League the week before in that Red Bulls 2 lineup. So, you know, they're both going to be good, but I'd expect Charlotte to be a more consistent threat than a New York side that, you know, maybe is going to be a little bit uncertain from week to week.
Sure. So thinking about TFC 2, who are like the star players that us as Riverhounds fans, who should we be watching out for come Saturday?
It's a really young team. It's sort of hard to pick out an individual who's going to be really sort of the guy that the team goes through. I like to break the roster down into a couple of key groups. You know, there's the core group, and that's sort of the guys that have, this will be their 3rd or 4th season playing in USL, and they've come up through the academy and they've played together for several years. And so, you know, that includes guys like Luca Uccello and Aiden Daniels and Malik Johnson. And, you know, you've got Angelo Cavalluzzo, the goalkeeper, and they've added a couple more young guys in Robert Boscovich and Matt Serbly that are going to be key players this season. And then there's always Sean Hundle, who's still only 18 or 19. He'll be playing in his 3rd or 4th season, and he's really sort of grown in leaps and bounds. He had a really slow start to the season last year, but come the last 5 or 6 games, I think he bagged like 5 or 6 goals, and so he was in good form. But he's one of those players that was Dallas eligible, and so we haven't seen much of him yet this year. And then the next stanchion is sort of like the really young guys. And we're talking like 17-year-olds turning 18. They've tasted USL before. But I mean, like when you're going up against a team with, you know, grizzled veterans that have 10 years of experience in the professional game and you're a 17-year-old, you know, it's always going to be a bit of a challenge. And that's, you know, they signed 3 of them last year, Julian Dunn, Rocco Romeo and Noble Akello, and we've only seen Rocco so far, and he's looked pretty good, but he's had his challenges. And another feisty right back named Dante Campbell, and we haven't seen him yet because he's been down with TFC 3, but I expect all of them to play roles. And then on top of that, there's sort of the other stanchion, which is guys who are sort of brought in to either fill needs or guys that the club wants to take a good, hard, long look at. And so you're looking at guys like, they signed a Ghanaian kid named Gideon Waya, who made a little cameo last match in the end, and he's sort of a tough as nails defensive midfielder, good on the ball. We only saw about 15 minutes of him, but I'm really curious to see what he brings this season. And you know, they signed another guy named Malik Hamilton, who's a Canadian that spent the last couple of years in the West Ham Academy system, and we haven't gotten a look at him, but I'm curious to see what he brings to the side. And then Ryan Telfer, who is a local boy, but he's not an academy product, and he's one of the older guys on the team at 24, which says about all you need to know about the status of the roster when the 24-year-old is the grizzled vet. Toronto last weekend, when they were off, they ended up playing a friendly. They ended up going up to Ottawa to play a friendly against the Fury, and they won 2-0, and Telfer scored both goals, and he's a beast, and he's voracious, and he covers a lot of ground, and he's a pest, and so he'll be fun to watch this season.
Yeah. Does so we'll get into the 2 issue a little bit either, but does TFC send a lot of players down? I know from my MLS team is the Philadelphia Union, and I know they send quite a few players to Bethlehem Steel. Does TFC send a lot of players down, or do they kind of let TFC 2 kind of operate as the young guys and that's just what it tends to be?
No, they send a fair number down. It's rarely, you know, we've never seen, well, we've only played 2 games so far, but I mean, I'd say the most that you'll ever see in one game is sort of like 2 or 3. And so it's very much a spot duty sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so far, Liam Fraser, who was signed to the first team, having been with the USL signed for a couple of years, he played in the first match, but then he was off with Canada for the second game. And, you know, Ben Spencer has been available for both, and he's sort of like the third or fourth striker on the, he's probably the fourth or fifth striker with the first team. So he's been down for both games. Jordan Hamilton got a start in the last game, and he's sort of with Spencer in that, you know, when you're behind Jozy Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco, and Tosin Ricketts is a pretty fine striker, minutes are going to be very hard to come by. And then we've also seen, last week was a bit of a surprise in that Caleb Patterson-Sewell, the third string keeper for the first team, ended up getting the start down against Charlotte. And I think that was just one of those ones where you need to get your guys games sometimes. And, you know, that's part of the reason that TFC has the second team.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So something that we talk a lot about as Riverhounds fans and involved with the team a little bit. So we talk about that difference between having a two team and then kind of being this independent USL team. And I know that, you know, a lot of the USL teams who are the independent teams are very proud of that. And we have the old guard shield and all of that. So we're very proud of that fact. How do you see, like, what do you see as the difference between maybe motivation or like whatever between a two team and kind of an independent team? And like, would you say that the TFC organization like really cares how the TFC 2 team does, or are they just like using it as like a proving ground for young players?
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky question, and I've always sort of vacillated on how to think about this. You know, it is a secondary team, like that's clear by the two in the name, and but I don't think I would ever accuse anybody there of not being in it to win it. You know, like that's sort of the nature of professional sports, is that if you don't go out there to win every time you play, then you're sort of doing yourself a disservice. And so the way that I would liken it is in a standard club, you know, you're putting everything that you have into getting that result on Saturday, whether it's, you know, making sure your players are fed, making sure they're taken care of, making sure they get you get the best players you can get, and making sure that everything is right so that when the game comes on Saturday, you guys are ready to play and you're ready to go out and win. And with TFC 2, all of that still applies, except there are a couple other considerations that have to come in, whether it's a guy from the first team that needs to get some minutes, whether it's, you know, a kid from the academy that's showing a lot of promise and you want to see what kind of future he has there. So it's just, there's these additional factors that you have to bring into the equation. Whereas as a team like Pittsburgh goes out there and they have, you know, they have all the constraints that every other team will have between finances and rules in the league and whatnot. But, you know, TFC just has those other couple of little things to consider.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we look forward to the game on Saturday, what is kind of the typical formation playing style as the TFC 2 has? And is it sort of the same as the first team?
I think ideally they'd like to get to that position where they're the same as the first team. Now, what the first team plays is a bit of a different question because they've sort of been back and forth on a couple of things over the last few years. And so, so far through the two matches, we've seen TFC 2 come out in a 4-4-2, generally with a diamond sort of feel, but it very much varies depending on which players are available in terms of if you have a very defensive midfielder sitting at the back versus somebody who's more of a box-to-box sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first team tends to play, well, they came to prominence over the last year and a half playing that 3-5-2 with the marauding wingbacks, and I think that's something very much that TFC 2 wants to do. But also the first team has moved to a diamond 4-4-2, and you're never quite sure what it is exactly that Greg Vanney is going to trot out on any given day. And I get the sense that's very much where TFC 2 wants to be as well. But those considerations of how many players you have available in which positions and coming up with the formation that's going to best get you the result on the day becomes a factor as well. You know, I asked their head coach after the first match if the 4-4-2 was something that we should expect. And, you know, he sort of laughed and sort of mentioned that, you know, they might try out a 3-5-2 one of these days, but he only had two center backs available, so that made it a little bit tricky. So,
yeah,
you know, being two games in, I'm not going to say for certain that they'll come out in a 4-4-2, but that's what I'd be leaning towards.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, thanks for all of that information. We'll kind of delve into more some specific stuff about this game coming up, but just wanted to give you a chance to kind of ask some questions about the Riverhounds, and if there's people that kind of follow what you do and listen to the things that you're on and stuff, if you wanted to get some information for your people about the Riverhounds. Just wanted to give you an opportunity to ask some questions.
Yeah, so tell us about the season so far. Two games in, 0 goals for, 0 goals against. Sounds exciting.
Yeah, it's been super exciting. I think there's like, I think you hear players say it all the time of like, you want to take something positive from the games and you want to look at games and not feel like it was a 0-0 waste, but that there was actually something that you can take and it was positive. I think first game of the season going down to Nashville, their home opener, 19,000 people in the stand, sort of a rainy, kind of cold night in Nashville too. I think we actually did a pretty good job of coming out there with a 0-0 draw. I think we had chances. I mean, we had 6 or 7 shots that I think were good work and good effort getting into the box, and just couldn't finish it. But I think one of the things that I liked about that game was it was very clear that Bob Lilly came out and said, we want to kind of kill all the energy in this stadium and kind of get it quiet before we kind of go on the front foot, and just really came out. A lot of early fouls, a lot of early clear out of bounds, sort of just breaking up play, making it not look coherent at all. And I can tell you in the first half of that game, I was very frustrated as what was happening. But looking back on it, then they came out in the first 15 minutes of the second half and just dominated for the first 15 minutes. I mean, just up and down the field, putting balls in the box, had a couple shots that could have very easily been goals. And I think that was just the plan. That was just what was supposed to happen. And then I think in the last 15 minutes of the game or so, Nashville kind of got back on the front foot with the energy from the crowd and trying to get that goal before the end of the game. But I think we did well to come out of there with a 0-0 draw. However, last week playing Penn FC, I don't feel that way. I feel like that was a wasted game that just I think – the one positive that I would pull out of it was last year we gave up a lot of late goals. We would get to the 85th minute and then give up a goal. And so I felt good about the fact that we did finish off the game. I just felt like we could have scored. And there was a lot of balls in the box. There was a lot of things that we did well and just a lot of wasted chances in the box that could have very easily been goals. So I wasn't as happy about that one, but we haven't lost a game yet, so I'll take the positives from there.
Yeah, you know, this time of year you're always sort of, it's always sort of a feeling out process, it's sort of the team getting used to its new players and sort of getting their feet under them and everything like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm as much of a fan of a good nil-nil as anybody. And so what are some of the key sort of ins and outs this year? I saw Corey Herzog is gone and Canardo Forbes, a guy who really impressed me with Rochester, has moved in.
Yeah, I think there's a couple. And I think Corey Herzog is going to be a big loss. I think we've already seen that just in the goal scoring chances that have not been finished. I think Corey may have finished some of those. Maybe not, though, too. Goal scoring is one of those things that some days you're on, some days you're off, and maybe – Romeo Parks has just had 2 off weeks, but I think Corey was a big is going to be a big miss. I think just the change from Dave Brandt to Bob Lilly, I think, just brought in a new system and some new ideas and just different things like that. So some of the players that we had didn't fit necessarily the system or the type of play that Bob Lilly wants. So I think Taylor Washington was probably a big out, now in Nashville. And I think we are kind of relying on some young keepers. You know, we had Kiesel Broom, Trey Mitchell here last year who were kind of vets in the league and had some experience at different teams. And so that is not necessarily a miss so far. I think our goalkeepers have done well, but it could be. Other than that, I think we kept a decent group of players. And then with Rochester kind of taking their hiatus, Lilly brought in a good chunk of Rochester players. I think it's 7, maybe 8 Rochester players plus 6 or 7 returning Riverhounds players. So I think, yeah, there's been some good additions outside of that. I think Canardo Forbes is going to be a good one. I think he has played well in the time that he has had so far. I'm excited to see what Ben Zemanski, who was a Portland player for a time, what he can bring. I know he struggled with injuries in Portland, so we're hoping that doesn't happen this year, but we can see what happens with that. I think Cristiano Francois is a pretty good player. He needs to be able to score some goals from that wing spot, but as long as he keeps putting balls in the box, I'm not going to complain too much about that. And then we have some young players. Tommy V, as we refer to him.
I looked at that last name. It's a mouthful, man.
Yeah, I still don't understand how to say it. But I think it's Van Kaziel. He is, I think, going to be a pretty good player, and he's gotten time the last 2 weeks, which I didn't necessarily expect. And there's some other players that I think are going to be good. I think Dennis Chin is an interesting addition as a veteran striker, and hopefully maybe he can start putting some balls in the box. Are in the goal, maybe in the absence of Romeo Parks this weekend.
Yeah, and you guys have a young Canadian down there, I believe, Jordan Dover. Have you gotten a chance to have a look at him?
Yeah, I think he started both games so far and has looked good. I think it's interesting. Lily kind of very early on said, I don't have a set formation and I kind of play to the opponent, which I think is an interesting concept. And it works sometimes and it doesn't work others. So the first week against Nashville, we came out in a 5-3-2, 3-5-2, however you want to refer to that. It mostly looked like a 5-3-2. But I think Dover did himself well that game, kind of getting up and down the wings, sending some balls into the box. And I think he was also good, really good on the defensive end of the field. And then last week we played 4-2-3-1. And so he was pinned back a little bit more with the back four instead of the back three. So he was pinned back a little bit more, but again, played a good defensive match. And we have not given up a goal yet. So I feel like he's been proving himself well.
Excellent, excellent. And every time I see a picture of that stadium you guys have there by the river, I'm always rather taken aback by it. It seems like a lovely place for a soccer game. Tell me a little bit about it and some of the supporters groups and sort of the atmosphere and the vibe on game day.
Yeah, absolutely. We love that stadium. That stadium is fantastic. It sits right on the river in Pittsburgh, and downtown is right across the river. So the typical shot you'll see is from the corner of the stadium looking at the scoreboard and then the city in the backdrop. And so we love that. I think it's just a fun place to have a game. As far as supporters groups, the main one is called the Steel Army, and they do a great job. They do a big tailgate before every game, and so they have people in the parking lot for a 7 o'clock game from like 2 o'clock on, and do a great job just kind of getting the crowd into it. I think even last week our one home game it was cold. It was not the prettiest night, but the Steel Army kept cheering all night long and kept the team up and in the game. I think the stadium is becoming more and more kind of family friendly. I think with the rules for stadium seating wise that we have to have 5K in the stadium, we had to add some seats this year. And so they added a section on the field, on the river side of the field. And so you are sitting almost on the field. And so it's right there. And that's what I've always liked about Highmark. Almost no matter where you're sitting in the stadium, you are right there on the field. And so you can hear the players yelling back and forth and chirping when there's fouls and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes I think we need a language filter on the field, but other than that, no, it's fun to hear them talk and kind of communicate positively and negatively, but it's fun to hear that because you're right there on the stadium. So, and the other thing that I love about it is the food is super cheap. So, I'm not complaining about the prices of food in that stadium.
And did I read it's dollar beers on Saturday because of the short notice or something?
That's actually a thing they do every week. And so for 2 hours previous to kickoff, 5 to 7, I think they're just little 6 or 8 ounce cups. They're not huge cups, but it's dollar beers. And they have a good selection on tap. They have a local brewery actually made a brew for us called the Golden Hound Ale. But they have a good selection, even some ciders and stuff too. So you can get a good drink to start the game.
Excellent, man. That all sounds wonderful. Hopefully I can make it down one of these days.
Yeah, it's a beautiful stadium, and I think it's I don't want to say it's necessarily one of the best in the league, but we have a strong bias toward it. But it's a great stadium and great fun on game day. So just a fun time.
Excellent.
All right. Well, I hope that both sets of fans kind of got some information on the other team and were able to kind of know what to expect going into the game this weekend. But let's get to some predictions a little bit and see if we can figure out kind of what this game might look like this weekend. So we have a little formula that we kind of use. Usually we have a moderator, so I'll do it a little bit differently. But let's talk about our specific teams. I'll let you go first, James. But if TFC2 win on Saturday, it'll be because dot, dot, dot.
If TFC win on Saturday, it'll be because they start the game with some urgency. You know, we've seen them, aside from scoring that early goal in New York, they're a team that has a tendency to start out a little bit slow and be a little bit timid and sort of let the other team take the initiative and look to respond from that. And so if they're gonna get anything out of Saturday's match, I think it's incumbent upon them to come out ready to play and come out with some points in mind.
Yeah. So if the River Hounds win, it'll be because I hate to say it, but I think they score a goal. And then I think with the absence of Romeo Parks, I think it gives the River Hounds an interesting chance to go ahead and put somebody else up top. I think there would be some hesitancy if we just saw a change in striker this early in the season without the injury. But with the injury, I think it gives the River Hounds almost an excuse of like, hey, go ahead and try this, see what happens. So I think it'll be that maybe a new striker gets some different energy into the team, and maybe we finish off some of these chances that we've been creating. So I think it will be because the attack kind of gets on board, and then the defense holds up in the absence of Joe Greenspan. But I'm less worried about that than them actually scoring. So our next question would be, if TFC2 lose, it'll be because dot, dot, dot.
If TFC2 lose, it'll be because they can't help but continue to commit the individual errors and the little mistakes that sort of compound and end up leading to the other team scoring. You know, both goals in New York, you could sort of chalk down to individual mistakes, and both goals in Charlotte sort of, there were situations where had a player made a better choice or a teammate come over to support that player better, then none of the goals should have been scored. And so if TFC lose, it'll be because they've shot themselves in the foot again.
Yeah, if the River Hounds lose, it'll be because, again, the attack just doesn't happen. And two, our defense falls apart. I think our defense has been pretty solid this season. We haven't, you know, we give up a chance here or there, a header on a corner, things like that. But we have not given up too many good shooting opportunities. And so I think it'll be, if we lose, it'll be because our defense kind of falls apart. And I think that could happen in the absence of Joe Greenspan. He was really the leader of our defense. And without him there, it could fall apart. But I think I trust Toby Adewale, who's the other center back. And then we did sign Hugh Roberts from Bethlehem Steel. So I trust both of them. But if we lose, it'll be because that change kind of causes the team to fall apart a little bit. So one last thing for our listeners. So if you were to predict the score of the game this weekend, what would you predict?
I'm very tempted to go with a 0-0 because I'm sensing there's a pattern building down there. But, you know, let's have some fun. Let's go for a bit of a high-flying 2-2. You know, both teams sort of make some chances, waste some chances, give the other team some chances, and let's have some fun this weekend.
Yeah, that's what I was – you know, I've done this preview show the last 2 weeks, and both times I said 2-1 Pittsburgh in the first game and 3-1 in the second game, and neither of them have happened. So I think I'm going to go 1-0 River Hounds. I think we just don't give up much on the defense, but if we did get a 2-2 draw, I might be happy with that because we might have actually had some attack that worked. So, but I'll go 1-0 Hounds.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
All right. So the game is Saturday at 3 p.m. You can catch it on the YouTube USL channel or down at Highmark Stadium. Remember, $5 general admission. Season ticket holders get in for free. James, a huge thanks for stopping by, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Anytime. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So everyone, be sure to go follow him on Twitter. It's Grawsee. So G-A-R-G-R-A-W-S-E-E. And check out his coverage. It's all over the place, like I said before. So thanks to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, official scarf supplier to the MLS, USL, and the U.S. soccer teams. Get your custom scarves for your group or your team at roughneckscarves.com. And head over to iTunes, subscribe to the show, leave us a review, let us know what you think of this episode, and thanks for joining us. So see you Saturday at the game.